Small businesses. Riftresearch.com. Jobs in Kent.com.
Want more business? Make it happen by joining supplymybusiness.co.uk and start generating more business today for your Kent business.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on KentBusinessRadio.co.uk on this Tuesday, May the 31st, with me, Paul Andrews, and the absolutely lovely Shirley Mansfield. Yeah, absolutely. So far, so good. The weather's kind of holding up out there, and we're getting loads of tweets, loads of emails, loads of things. We've got another great guest to talk to shortly. I think, Shirley, what we'll do is a couple more tweets. So I've got a tweet here from the lovely Gemma. And Gemma is from Orchard Employment Law, and you can follow Gemma on the Twitter at Gemma, JEMMAFAIRHAY, Gemma Fairhay, on the Twitter, and she's Orchard Employment Law, and she says, "Phil and Webb, please can you tell the lovely Business Bunker listeners about an event that I have planned? Oh, and by the way, it's a great show. Thank you, Gemma." And Gemma has an event planned, which is an employment law and auto-enrolment event, and it's on June the 14th, and it's between 9 a.m. and 12 p.m, and it's happening at the St. George Hotel in Chatham. And she has given me a link to book the tickets, which is an eventbrite.com /employment law. But I can't see the whole link because it's on Twitter. So to use this thing is to follow Gemma on the Twitter and find the link for it. And Gemma, as I said, her Twitter handle is Gemma with a J, Gemma Fairhay, F-A-I-R-H-A-Y, Gemma Fairhay, all one word. Follow Gemma on the Twitter, Orchard Employment Law. They have employment law and auto-enrolment event on June the 14th, St. George's Hotel, Chatham. So do check that out.
Okay, Cocky, I've got a request for a shout-out here from the workroom. So on the Twitter, they are at @ecommerce_Kent. So afternoon, Vanilla Web and Coaches to me. Can we have a shout-out, please?
Cool.
We are an e-commerce web development and marketing agency based in Canterbury. So shout it out.
Good stuff. I'm having criticism now.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm having criticism now from Supply My Business. They say, "Hi, Paul and Shirley. You sound like you've got a summer cold, Paul." No, it's just a deep, husky voice. How many times have I got to tell him? It's sex on a stick. Something like that.
Yeah, Martin, he sounds like he's got a cold.
Yeah, yeah, no, I've got a cold, Martin. Thank you. He said, "We're tuned in and listening, and we've got the heating on." Absolutely, yeah.
It's cold.
Ridiculous. It's almost June. It's June tomorrow, and we've all got the heating on. Caroline and Liz,
yes.
The Organic Sisters. That's not easy to say. You need to be careful with that one.
I know.
The Organic Sisters, Riverfoot_Kent, Liz and Caroline. "It's wild, it's windy, but your Organic Sisters still deliver fruit, veg to businesses, offices throughout Kent." So get your veg box from Riverfoot_Kent, the lovely Caroline and Liz.
Perfect.
Mm.
Okay. Well, Kent and Victor Chamber have got their After Hours Club. Now, these run from 6 p.m. till 7:30 p.m. You don't need to book, so you don't need to worry about any links. You can just turn up. The event's open to members and non-members. Come and join them for an evening of networking. Next two events, 7th of June at the Nucleus Business and Innovation Centre at Dartford, and 9th of June at the Coniston Hotel in Sittingbourne.
Fantastic. I've had a tweet from Miss MPS, or Miss MP Services. That's the lovely Claire Runham. And she says, "Vanilla Web, that was indeed very cheesy music." I'm sorry, Claire. It was a bit, yeah. She says, "Hi to everyone on the Business Bunker from our new offices at the East Malling Research Centre."
Fabulous.
So, as well as providing virtual office assistant services, they are going to be cloning apples by the looks of it.
Could be, couldn't they?
Yeah, nice one, Claire. Yeah, yeah. I'll have two pairs of apples.
I'd almost say the Pink Lady.
Absolutely. A pound of cherries, please. Cool. So thank you for that. Miss MP Services on the Twitter. Do give Claire and the lovely team there a follow. Rural Kent Retailer Awards this year. They are a charity organisation that recognises the important role of village shops and post office play in maintaining vibrant communities in rural Kent. Not only in terms of villages being able to purchase supplies and access banking and postal services and other things without having to travel outside the village or long distances, but also the shop and post office being an important social hub in any village.
Definitely, I'd agree.
Absolutely. And this year in October, they're putting on an awards night to celebrate the superb service and unwavering dedication of all the Kent rural retailers that bring so many benefits to the lives of residents in and around rural Kent. They are looking for a sponsor for the
are
event.
Are they? Right.
Yeah. So if anyone would like to talk about sponsoring the event, could you please contact Sharon Davis? And you can contact Sharon on the following email address, info@kentruralretailers.co.uk. That's info@kentruralretailers.co.uk. What a fabulous, fabulous thing. We do need to encourage our especially our rural shops, because it is really difficult to stay in business. Retail's hard enough as it is. In a rural setting, it's almost impossible these days.
Exactly, and the vast majority of them are independents.
Yeah.
And so I live just outside of Lenham, and we're lucky in the square there. We have a great bank of independent shops, so butchers, bakers, greengrocers, you know, off-licence, all this sort of stuff.
What, no candlestick maker?
That probably is.
I know one because there was one on here earlier.
Yes, I know, exactly. We have to do that. But interestingly, just down the road in Harrietsham, they have one small village shop.
Mm.
That's it. So, yeah.
It is odd how these things happen, isn't it? Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what? I think it's time to talk to our next guest, don't you?
I agree.
I think it's an absolute pleasure to welcome for the very first time onto the Business Bunker show, Mr. Rob Fenn of the Business Assessment Bureau. Rob, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. You've been incredibly patient sitting there listening to this nonsense for an hour or so. Thank you for joining us.
You're very kind. Yeah. Hi, everyone.
Cool. Why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about Rob and a little bit about what you do. But before you do that, I need to explain the cheesy music that I just played, really.
Yes, explain yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I played Mustang Sally there, and the reason I did that is I just happened to catch sight over the weekend of a tweet. I'm a bit of a Twitter maven, I'm afraid. And I saw a tweet go through, and I thought, do you know, that's the chap that's on the show on Tuesday. And he was, I was going to use the word posing, but that would not be right, because you weren't actually posing. You were just stood next to a sports car, which you were racing at Brands Hatch, I do believe. And it was a Mustang.
You've got me, yeah. I suppose when you lead with I'm Chief Executive of the British Assessment Bureau, to stop people from falling asleep, you've got to come in with something a bit interesting. So, yeah, from time to time, I indulge in my passion of cars, and I race a 67 Mustang, bright red,
wow,
called the Red Rooster.
67, that's the year after Bullet, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. So it's not quite a Bullet Mustang.
No, it's a notchback for all those, for the fans out there, yeah.
Absolutely. Cool. Okay, all right. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the Business Assessment Bureau. So tell us a little bit about your background, first of all, Rob, and then about your business.
Well, I'll call it BAB. That's going to be easier moving forward, isn't it? So we're family-based business.
Okay.
I'm the son of the owner originally.
Right.
We're based down in Kings Hill in Westmorland.
Right.
So a nice little setup there.
Right.
So despite the grandiose name, we're actually fairly small ourselves. So there's about 50 of us.
That's a pretty good size.
Yeah.
Though. Yeah.
But I suppose link it to what Emily and you guys were talking about earlier. We've got a lot of people that work from home.
Right.
But yeah, our main office is down in Kings Hill, and we work with people all over the country, but actually a huge bulk of them are in the Kent and sort of home counties area.
Right, okay. And let's kind of start to explore some of the things that BAB, as we've decided to call you, that BAB do, and the kind of fields that you work in.
So we specialise in ISO certification.
Right.
I want to try and avoid those words as much as possible to stop people from falling asleep. But in reality, what we do is help small businesses win new business and retain the business they've got.
Okay. Let's explore that a little bit, because you're absolutely right. Not necessarily people falling asleep, but a lot of people don't always understand what ISO is and the various different types of standards that can apply. And also, a few years ago, whatever it was, I can't even remember what it was, ISO 9000 or whatever it was, became a big voguish thing, and everybody was going for ISO 9000. And then all of a sudden, it kind of faded away a little bit, because I don't know why exactly, but it wasn't as funky and in vogue as it had been at one stage.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if we travel back in time for a second, most standards are derived here in Blighty.
Right.
And 9001, you can trace that right back to the First World War. So, you know, we were making bombs in bomb factories, and what was happening was either bombs would go off in factories, or...
which is not good.
Or, come the moment, they didn't go off at all.
Right.
So, two terrible situations there,
yeah.
And the military suddenly thought, well, we need to pay more attention to quality.
Yeah.
So what happened after the war was the government thought, well, this is good, let's promote it to the private sector.
Yeah.
So it started to develop, but it retained that bias towards manufacturing. So I think, you know, what you're talking about there, Paul, is people in the service sector especially found it hard to relate to it.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's changed in recent years, which has meant it's become really popular again.
Absolutely.
I guess a lot of businesses in the Kent are going to know something about it because it pops up in tenders.
Yeah.
So if you want to work for the local council or central government, you kind of got to know what you're doing with them.
Absolutely. And you have to prove to some extent that you are qualified or audited or assessed in a lot of the quality standards in order to get contracts in the first place, as you say.
That's right. If you really want to sort of fight the big boys, you've got to demonstrate your credentials. I mean, I had an interesting chat with someone in the procurement department at KCC who said, you know, they're absolutely desperate to give business to smaller businesses. But at the end of the day, they're looking after taxpayers' money. They can't just take a chance. They need small businesses to sort of step up and demonstrate they're as good as the big boys, like I said.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, absolutely. And you're quite right. And I've had those kind of conversations as well where not just KCC, but lots of public sector organisations, because they're actually given a task to actually give a percentage of their work to small local businesses. And then they struggle to give it to them because, for exactly the reason you say, you know, how do I tell who I'm giving it to?
Exactly. So it can be really frustrating, the sort of tender environment for small businesses.
Yep.
Because ultimately they're competing against maybe 50 other businesses all going for the same contract.
Yeah.
And they come away frustrated thinking, well, that was a waste of time. I didn't win it.
Yeah.
So that's where you've really got to ask questions, really.
Yeah.
Go back to the people that issued the tender and say, why didn't I win? Because things like the ISOs are the things that start to stick out as the difference.
Absolutely. I want to explore this whole standard thing now, because the thing that you made reference to just now, Rob, is absolutely true, where you said that initially these things were developed for manufacturing businesses, and therefore people went, well, I can't see how that applies to me, because a manufacturing process is a manufacturing process. You either follow it and make something that goes off in the right place, or you don't. And, you know, therefore the process is quite straightforward. And initially people weren't sure how you applied that to service businesses. Of course, we've moved on an awful lot long way since then, and there are standards for applying things to service businesses, and I just want to explore that a bit and get a feel for the kind of things that are service, and I want to concentrate a little bit. I know we do manufacturing in this country, and we do that. That's a little bit more obvious, if you see what I mean, than a lot of service businesses who may not be aware still that you can have ISO standards in a service business and how they would really work, and not just work for the reasons that you said, i.e. because someone will give you a contract,
yeah,
but absolutely. Work for you managing your business too.
Yeah, yeah, I'm glad you said it, because the reality is these standards weren't invented to help people win contracts with business.
Exactly.
It was supposed to improve your business.
Yeah.
So if we take ISO 9001, which is probably the most well-known out there, let's drop quality for a second.
Yeah.
So I was listening to a really interesting podcast at the weekend by McKinsey, the big management consultancy firm, and they were talking about customer satisfaction, but more importantly, the customer experience. And what they were saying is it's not as simple as just getting feedback these days. You've really got to get to the heart of what do your customers want? And that isn't just a survey at the end of the service. You've got to get all your departments involved, from operations, sales, accounts, and start asking yourself the question, can we do this better?
Yeah.
And this is what ISO standards are about. They're about getting everybody in the business involved, going through how you do things, who's responsible for it, and how can we do better, how can we communicate better, and ultimately, how does that mean we deliver better service?
Absolutely.
That's what they're about. And, you know, the two biggest problems for businesses, especially small ones, are, A, do we have the money, and do we have the time?
Yeah.
But the reality is, if you're not thinking about what the customers want, what are you doing?
Absolutely. You know, it's one of those things, isn't it? It's like a lot of things in business that we quite often think, you know, I haven't got the money, I haven't got the time, I can't do this. And we have this discussion about a whole range of different things. We were talking recently to some business insurance brokers, exactly the same thing, loads of small businesses, we can't afford insurance, we can't afford that. And you go, you can't afford not.
Hmm.
Yeah. On the day that your business burns down or gets burgled or gets flooded, you can't then take the insurance out.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. You have to invest in a risk. And from your point of view, with ISO standards, the whole point is, if you're going to grow your business eventually, you need to have some foundation to it that enables you to do just that. And saying you can't afford it is kind of daft, really.
Absolutely. I mean, really, I think a lot of small businesses, one of the big issues is when they want to grow, is it's extracting the knowledge from the owner and getting it out there to the rest of the staff. So, you know, he or she can be a bit more strategic. So, you know, the idea of these ISO standards is that if you get everyone involved, you know, whether the owner's on holiday or goes under a bus, people are going to know what goes on.
Isn't it all about sort of, you were talking about the customer experience. The businesses that are really successful are the ones that have a consistent execution of that. They do the same every time. And is that part of what the sort of whole quality standards means?
Yeah, I mean, exactly right. I mean, if you think about it, one of the reasons why ISO standards would pay you back is that if you're delivering a more consistent service, you're making less mistakes, you're getting less complaints, and therefore there's less firefighting. So instantly you're saving yourself time.
And I guess that means happier customers who go and tell everybody else how great you are.
Well, exactly that. And that's what you have to start measuring to just, you know, build the business case, really, because, yeah, more satisfied customers are going to shout about you a bit more. So, yeah, who wouldn't want that? It's certainly a lot easier than going and trying to win new business.
It's interesting, and you might come over here and slap me in a minute, but many years ago, in one of my own businesses, we were forced by customers to go for ISO 9001, that was part of a big contract we had, and they said, look, you know, we're making all of our suppliers have to conform to this. And we went, bloody, like paperwork. But in actual fact, it wasn't particularly onerous. It wasn't particularly difficult. It was interesting because it made us sit down and think about our business and how we did it and we go, oh, do you know, if we did it like that, it would be much easier. And we kind of lost sight of why we were doing it. Just to get that badge and got actually involved in, this is a process we need to think about because we could do this in a better way. And so it ceased very quickly to be a bureaucratic exercise and became a very useful business strategy exercise.
Well, sounds more like business improvement.
Yeah, exactly.
From how you've described it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Except we hadn't invented business improvement then, so we called it, you know, getting better or something. But so it's interesting. And then, of course, ongoing, you know, you have the regular assessments. And that was, you know, a bit of a breeze. The assessors would come in and go, yeah, you're okay. You need to think about this and da-da-da-da-da.
Well, yeah, I've got an advocate. So, yeah, I mean, that's good to hear. And I think, to go back to what Emily was talking about, the Generation Y factor as well, is that people within businesses are becoming more altruistic. It's all about the greater good. People care more now. And also, as consumers, we're getting incredibly fussy, Paul.
Oh, absolutely.
You've got the likes of Uber now, where you can book a taxi within a few clicks. And understandably, in the work environment, when you're dealing with your bank, when you're dealing with a boiler install, you're starting to think, well, why can't it be as easy as Uber?
Yeah.
So I think the time's now for small businesses to think, well, let's use our advantages. We're agile. We can make decisions quickly. This is where you can start to really nail... This is what our customers want.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And not only that, one of the other side issues of this is social media has become a platform for people to be very gruntled with their diss. Yeah. And I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of organizations, BT, that I spend most of my life being disgruntled with on Twitter because of their failure to communicate within their own organization. So, again, one of those things, it's very easy now for customers to give you a bad reputation if you're not careful. And, again, if you can't manage that properly, if you can't manage your customer relationships properly, you could be in big trouble very quickly, even as a small business. So, again, it's important to start to think about how we do those processes and how we handle those processes and how we talk to each other. And all of the things we've discussed so far today really have a very similar route for all of this, it seems to me, is that now we're much more inclined to talk to each other.
Oh, everybody does, don't they? And
yeah,
you know, it is really important. But also, the other thing about social media is, and the prevalence of everything online is, you know, data security and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And Rob, am I right in saying that there is also a standard which deals with information security of customer data and all that sort of stuff?
That's right. I mean, it's called ISO 27001, and it's started to get more and more popular thanks to, you know, the politicians leaving laptops on trains and, you know, all the hacking stories that have been in the news over the last sort of 24 months.
Well, it's interesting you say that. The Federation of Small Business, which I'm involved in, has been doing a lot of work just recently on cybercrime and trying to help people protect themselves, you know, because smaller and smaller businesses are now becoming victims of cybercrime.
Yeah. I mean, the FSB make a good point, because I think there's that misunderstanding that small businesses aren't affected. It's just a big, you know, talk are the ones with the problems.
Yeah.
But what we've got to remember is actually the small businesses are the most vulnerable. They're the ones with the least protection. You've got hackers out there at the moment who, it's just the case, if they bothered to pay you attention, they could probably do quite a bit of damage.
Absolutely. I mean, and it doesn't have to be massive stuff either, does it? In the early days of the radio station, we had a WordPress website, and it got hacked by an organisation calling themselves the Pakistani Music Massive, and they hacked our website, and they just played Asian sitar music 24 hours a day on our website, which was quite annoying after a little while. Just simple, you know, silly things like that can do enormous damage to a small business.
Mm. Oh, well, you think about the amount of businesses that have customer data, a name, address, an email, a phone number or whatever.
Mm. Well, that's the thing. I mean, these days, all that sort of data is on a computer or on a network somewhere, and it can be accessed. And to be fair, it's not just, you know, hackers in Pakistan you've got to worry about. It's the people that work there.
Yep.
You know, if you've got disgruntled employees, if you've got new employees, what access are you giving them to information? And, you know, if the worst was to happen, how do you control it? You know, could someone walk out with a USB stick with your most prized information, which could bring your business down? And that has happened.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay. Can you just inform us, refresh our memories, enlighten us in the first place, whatever part of the process we're in. For most smaller businesses, and I know that you're going to go, well, Paul, you know, it's an open-ended question, how long's a piece of string? But what I want to know is, what are the main standards that you would recommend for our types of listeners? And our types of listeners are mostly small service-based businesses.
Well, that's an easy one. It would definitely be ISO 9001.
Right.
The good thing is most of the standards all been revised relatively recently, so they all got the same structure, the same framework. So if you did get to a stage where, say, a client was insisting on it, the good thing is once you've done one, doing the others is pretty straightforward.
Okay.
But we've had small businesses, so you're talking 10 people
around
that sort of size,
right,
get certified in 6 weeks.
Right.
They've had to put tools down and focus on it, because, like we've discussed, if you're going to review all your processes, you know, working on the business rather than in the business, you've got a bit of time to it.
But I'm adamant about this. I really am adamant about this. If you're listening, listeners, it's, you know, too many people see it as an onerous task. I've got to stop doing my business while I go through this paperwork to do this to get accreditation in 6 weeks' time. But that isn't the deal. Not really. The accreditation is just a lucky thing at the end of it. As far as I'm concerned, this is a strategic business development
review. Oh, I have to agree with you, Paul. You've already talked about business improvement, and what Rob was just saying there just highlights risk management.
Yeah.
You know, so a business plan comes out of risk management, business improvement, strategy. I can only see that ISO just sits in there really neatly.
I spend a lot of time, I operate as an angel investor, and I invest in startup businesses. And even at the start of a business process, and when I first started in business, I was as bad as well. I hate numbers and things like that. Accounts, something that an accountant does. But you very quickly learn there are some basics that you need in a business. You need to understand a balance sheet. You need to look at your profit and loss. You need to look regularly at your management accounts, and you need to manage your cash flow. And failure to, I don't care what you do for a living, if you don't do those things, you're not going to be doing it for a living for long. And this is an extension of that, that says, okay, what does our business do? How does it do it? And what is the most efficient, effective way to do it. So going through an exercise like ISO 9001, you shouldn't view it from that bureaucratic viewpoint. Which so, and the reason I'm banging on about this is so many people I talk to go, yeah, well, it's a bit of bureaucracy. I haven't got time to do it.
Yeah.
And you go, really? You haven't got time to make your business better? Really?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I feel for owner managers because I'm one of them.
Yeah.
I mean, most of us start our businesses because we think we can do a better job of it.
Yeah.
We can have, you know, we can work flexibly.
Yeah.
And we can earn loads of money.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
You know the stories. Most startups don't make any money for a number of years,
sure,
let alone take a wage.
Yeah.
They're working 7 days a week. And they start to fall out of love with it because they're not doing what they want to do. But,
absolutely.
You know, if you can focus more time on the strategic stuff, that will hopefully lead to, you know, falling in love with business again.
Absolutely. So I want to now explore, if we may, Rob, the process that we go through. So just so the listeners understand, Bab, What is your role in this? So if somebody came to me and said, oh, I thought 9001, yeah, maybe I need to do that. What is your role as an organisation in this?
Yeah, so we're known as a certification body.
Right.
I suppose our USP is that we pretty much focus on the SME market. So we don't expect people to be all singing, all dancing. So the first stage of that is coming out to meet you. We want to see what you've got in place, which might be a terrifying prospect. But in reality, you may be doing a lot of good stuff.
Right.
You probably are. You're in business for a reason. And, you know, many of your processes might be in your head. That isn't a problem.
Yeah.
The first step is to put that down and see where the ground lies, really.
Right.
And there you start to see opportunities and get, you know, you have an assessor there on your side who wants to help you get through it. So they'll offer tips that they've seen from other businesses and how you can, how can you take those on as ideas. So the first step is simply what we call a gap analysis. So we see what you've got now and where you need to get to be compliant with the standards you've chosen.
Okay.
And once you're ready, we then come in for the more formal audit. So you get time to build what's known as a management system, which is just simply sort
what
of your manual.
Anyway.
Yeah, your manual of who does what, when, how, and why.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, so we come back and audit that, and that's when you get your nice.
Okay, so it's a kind of two-step process. You come in, you have a meeting, you review it, and you go, you don't want to do it like that. and yeah, that's okay, I like that, and da-da-da-da-da. And how do you do this? Yeah, well, you need to write that down. So you give people some pointers, some tips, and the kind of things they want to look at. They'll go away then and formalise the project.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when they're ready,
exactly,
they'll come to you and go, right, can you assess this and tell us whether it is good or not?
Exactly. So many are reticent because they think we're going to come in and change what they do, but it's not about that at all. It's just about formalising. So you've got a bar set for the future, really.
Right. Cool. I
sounds
might do
like
that.
Good fun.
And so we've talked a lot about ISO 9001. Are there any other standards that are kind of prevalent to a larger number of smaller businesses?
So we've briefly touched upon ISO 27001, which used to be known as more of an IT standard because it affected data. It was sort of hosting companies, website firms, app developers.
Oh, sorry, what was the standard again?
ISO 27001.
27001.
Yeah,
let's stick a one on the end. What's that? It was just make it look like it wasn't a rounded number.
Well, I'm not even going to bother explaining that because you definitely will fall asleep. But yeah, that's actually branched out now. You'll find recruitment companies.
Yeah.
Go for it, because again, they're dealing with important data. You know, medical companies, so lots and lots.
Yeah.
But other than that, although not quite as popular nowadays, it's the ISO 14001. So back when Mr. Cameron came into the power, he said, I want to build the greenest government ever.
Right.
So we saw ISO 14001, which is all about reducing environmental impact, appear on all the tenders.
Right.
So yeah, that's almost as common as ISO 9001, but I'd say if you're a small business, the one to start with is ISO 9001 because it's a bit of everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. We could talk about this for a long time. Sadly, we're kind of running out of time. If our listeners want to find out more about the British Assessment Bureau and ISO standards, what can they do?
We've actually got a brand new website. So I encourage everyone to go to British-Assessment. It's got four S's in. .co.uk. Or they can catch us on the BAB official on Twitter.
Cool.
And after the show, I'll run back to the office and I'll share that McKinsey link, which I think is really interesting. And
brilliant.
Yeah, check us out.
Fantastic. Rob, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Absolute pleasure to hear from you. Very interesting topic. If you want to find out more, as Rob says, go to their website. Currently, there is a link to their website on the Kent Business Radio website, so you can always link via there as well. But for the moment, Rob, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunk Show.
Thank you.
Cheers. Good stuff. We're fast running out of time. We've got loads of things to cover. I've got loads of things, and I've just had a tweet from Laura Burton Lawrence, completely unrelated to anything we were talking about, but it's triggered something I meant to do anyway. And Laura has said, I just got back in time to listen to the second half of the show. I'll catch up to the first half later. Been out getting a wedding anniversary prezzy for me and Mr. BL. Mm. So congratulations to Laura and Russell Burton Lawrence on their third wedding anniversary. And that has reminded me that I've been a bit remiss because I needed to say congratulations to Mike and Sandra. Of this parish, Mike Thompson, our technical director at Channel Radio, and his lovely new wife, Sandra, who got married at the weekend. So many congratulations to them. And I also happen to know that Richard Torbal and Lucy Milton tied the knot at the weekend too. So many congratulations to them. And Rob, sitting opposite me, is about to go on his stag weekend next weekend. Where are you going?
North Wales.
North Wales. Avoid North Wales next weekend, please, everyone. It could be messy. So congratulations to you all.
Absolutely, It's wedding season now, isn't it?
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah, I'm off to a wedding on Saturday. So.
Are you?
Mm-hmm. Hope it stays dry.
I know.
Wasn't that interesting?
It was very interesting, and... Do you know, it's one of those things that I suppose as you get older, you get a bit more sensible as well, hopefully, about why things work the way that they do and how to make things work the way that they do.
Yeah.
And you also realise that you don't know everything and, you know, sometimes you just need some outside input into it to look at what you're doing.
Yeah, sometimes it's just a different pair of eyes. But I think the interesting bit for me is how the whole strategy, business improvement, all of that helps.
Yeah.
And I think the interesting thing that Rob was telling us earlier on is, you know, the fact that actually lots of people ask for those certificates before you can tender.
Absolutely.
So if you don't have the certificate, you can't.
That's it. You're out of the game. Yeah. You're out of the game.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a moot point that has been said many, many, many times, but it is still, for all of that, it is still incredibly true.
Yeah.
If you're running a business, don't work in the business, work on the business.
I know. You've been reading my book again, haven't you?
I have, actually, yeah. And very good it is, too.
Self promotion.
Yeah.
That's great.
Do you know what? It's that time of the show again when...
Channel Radio News Update.
It's that time of the show again when we do a Federation of Small Business news roundup. So I'll tell you what, Shirley, do you want to start off with one of the news items for the FSB?
Absolutely. Just on the theme of women again, I noticed there was a tweet coming from the FSB, a Women in Business event on the 14th of June at Base Point, Dartford. So that's a very quick shout out for that one. FSB, Enterprising Allies report. The FSB released a new report this week about small business university engagement called Enterprising Allies. This report calls for better engagement between universities and businesses, arguing that universities have a significant role to play in supporting their local enterprise ecosystem. The report highlights a range of other areas where businesses and universities can collaborate, including research and development, procurement and fostering spin-outs.
Cool.
We used to have the Knowledge Transfer Partnership. Is that still around?
So. Yeah, yes, it is. This is a different level. The university, certainly the University of Kent, still has the Knowledge Transfer Partnership.
Yeah.
And there's two levels, or there used to be, two levels of KTP. There's a big one for big corporates, and then there was... and normally the Knowledge Transfer Partnerships were like 3 to 5 year projects.
Yes.
And then they had a small business Knowledge Transfer Partnership, which takes place over a year and was less onerous and stuff like that. But this is a collaboration between the FSB and universities based on the fact that the FSB produced a survey in conjunction with Greenwich University about 18 months ago now about employability. And it was exactly as Emily was saying earlier, that small businesses, and small businesses have created 80% of all new jobs in the private sector, are completely disinterested in qualifications.
Mm.
They have no time for degrees and stuff like that. Now, I'm being a bit, you know, gross about this.
Yeah.
Because
generalisation.
Yeah. If you're going to be a brain surgeon or indeed a lawyer or anything, you need the appropriate degree to be that. But what they're saying is for the run-of-the-mill jobs or for everyday jobs or for trades or professions, they're not so interested in the qualifications. What they want is work attitude and work skill.
Absolutely.
So that has been something that we've been working on. We have a project called the 30-30 Project Programme that we introduced to schools and colleges. That has been very successful in taking businesses into those organisations and letting students hear directly from businesses. Yeah, why not hear it from the horse's mouth? Perfect. As a business, this is what I want to hire and this is what I'm going to hire against. If I want you to be able to read and write, and I want you to be able to read and write really well. Outside of that,
Turning up on time is another good one.
To be here on time. I want you to be willing to learn while you're here, and I want you to have a work attitude. And that is the major way to get a job.
It is. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and so we've been talking to schools and colleges about that, and that is now being worked on with universities too, because they recognise the importance of that as well.
Perfect.
So that's where that's going.
Perfect.
Cool.
Okay.
Yes, I think we have mentioned this already, but I'm going to mention it again. There's a WIB lunch, although this may be a different WIB lunch. This is an FSB Kent and Medway in association with Base Point Dartford.
That's one I just picked up off the Twitter. I jumped in, I'm sorry.
Okay, no, that's all right. Well, I'll give you some more detail about it. It's the Federation of Small Business Kent and Medway in association with Base Point Dartford is pleased to invite you to a bi-monthly networking event for women in business. Spaces are limited to allow for effective roundtable discussion, so book your to secure your place now. And the next one is taking place on Tuesday the 14th of June, that's in 2 weeks' time, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. and that's at the lovely Base Point, which is in Victoria Road, Dartford. And the programme is from 10 a.m. arrival for informal networking over tea, coffee and pastries. 10:30 is a welcome from Deborah Turner, and Deb is the FSB champion for women in business, and Michelle Gagey, who is the Base Point Dartford Centre Manager, and then she's the speaker, and there's a roundtable discussion. There's more networking at 11:30, and then they wind up at 12 o'clock.
Fab.
All attendees will need to park in the public car park, which is directly opposite Base Point, and that costs £4 a day. And I do hope you'll be able to join us, says Deborah. So there you go. Again, you can find out and book your ticket by going to the Kent Business Radio website and click on the FSB tab, and you will find the details of that there.
Perfect. Okay, and I am loving this next announcement. Mm. FSB calls for investment in neglected rural roads.
Well,
having had to have a new tyre last week because I hit
the road. Don't even get me started on that. I'm five down in 3 months.
I can imagine it. So the FSB has launched a new report this week calling for greater investment in local and rural roads to help support UK's small businesses. The report, called Going the Extra Mile, Connecting Businesses and Rural Communities, found most smaller firms rely on their local roads and public transport, yet half of small businesses believe they have worsened in recent years. I'm amazed it's just half. The FSB said new combined authorities emerging out of the devolution agenda are well placed to prioritise spending on transport infrastructure. Let's hope it comes quickly.
Fantastic. I've mentioned this before, but I wanted to mention it again because I think this is absolutely a brilliant tool, and it's coming back to the employment situation. The FSB have made us aware of a new tool which shows the deficit in skills by geographic area of the country.
Mm.
Right? And it was developed by IPPR and analytics firm Burning Glass Technology. And they've developed a tool that tackles the mismatches that exist in many parts of the country between the skills needed by employers and those that are available in the local workforce. It's the first freely available tool of its kind in the UK and is intended to be used by national and local decision makers, education and training providers and employers to address critical issues of employment. The tool is called Where the Work Is. And you can find out more about it online. The web address is wheretheworkis.org, wheretheworkis.org. I've had a look at it. It's brilliant. It's pretty accurate. Obviously, I have a lot of data from the businesses that I own, and I'm pretty impressed with it. It's pretty accurate about the skill shortages.
That's good.
And it tells you what skills are available and what skills are in demand based on postcodes around the United Kingdom. It's a really, really valuable tool. And it's the first time we've had something like this in the UK because we'd lagged behind with things like this. In the US, for over 40 years, they had a thing called the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, where you could go and look up a job by its job title. It would tell you where it was in demand and where it wasn't, what the average salaries were around the various parts of the United States for that job, what qualifications you needed to get that job, and who was currently employed.
Perfect.
And that existed for many, many years. Unfortunately, the US federal government decided to abandon that a couple of years ago. They have replaced it with something, but the thing that they replaced it with, which I can't even remember what it's called, wasn't half as good as the DOT. So I think they're working on redoing it. But we've never had anything like that at all. And this doesn't have that depth of information in it, but it does tell you what skills are in demand by postcode and what skills are available. Really good resource. Do check it out.
Excellent.
Wheretheworkis.org.
Where the work is. Okay. Right. FSB, small firms call for help with energy costs. More than a third, 36% of business owners believe that providing grants to carry out energy efficiency upgrades is the most important action government can take to help small firms reduce energy costs, according to a British Gas survey of over 2,000 business owners. 13% of survey respondents have seen a decrease in their energy bill in over the last 3 years, whilst 35% have seen prices rise. 35% have seen prices rise, and 37% have seen little or no change. Research found that only 8% of business owners believe more guidance on energy efficiency would help them reduce costs, and just 4% believe financial arrangements such as low-cost loans or lease agreements would help.
Cool. We've had a warning from the pensions regulator. The pensions regulator has warned smaller employers about the financial consequences of failing to comply with more of their silly regulations. And we can't keep ignoring this. It's about auto-enrollment and the escalating amount of penalty notices that they're issuing for businesses that have not done anything about this and have missed their staging date. There are too many small businesses that really still believe this doesn't apply to them. And it does. It applies to absolutely everybody that employs even one employee. That's you, Mr. Business. And the authorities are now handing out fines. And it's worse than that. The rate of interest on the fines is £50 a day.
How much?
£50 a day.
Wow.
For not paying the fine. And they're even increasing those in terms of the amount they're issuing. And that's only for employers with employees up to 49 employees. If you've got more employees than 49, it's £500 a day.
Yep.
Sort it, guys.
Yep.
Get it done.
Can't ignore it. Definitely can't do head in the sand where that's concerned.
Absolutely not.
So, yeah. Okay. I've got some details of a new text service to opt out of marketing calls, which has been launched.
Oh, okay.
Mobile phone users can send a simple free text message to opt out of unsolicited sales and marketing calls from today. The text-to-register service, launched by the Telephone Preference Service and Ofcom, enables mobile phone users to add their number to the UK's official Do Not Call database by texting TPS to their email. You can opt out by texting TPS and your email address to 78070.
Cool.
So, texting TPS and your email address to 78070.
Fantastic. And we'll see how that works. I signed up to the Telephone Preference Service quite some time ago. And back in the early days, it wasn't that useful. I still got loads of calls. And
is that landline or mobile?
That was landline. I don't know what it's working like now, because luckily BT solved that problem for me by making my landline not work for months on end, so nobody could call me.
Actually, as you know, we've just moved to VFast for our broadband, and actually thought, do we need a landline?
No, we don't.
So we've just dropped our landline completely.
Increasingly, landlines are only used for your ADSL. Yeah, we've all got mobiles now, haven't we?
Exactly.
There's a review going on of the Enterprise Finance Guarantee, and the review has now been published. And a strategic review of the Enterprise Finance Guarantee Scheme, which examines the effectiveness of EFG and its impact on small firms in the UK. And it has been published by the British Business Bank. And EFG provides a government guarantee for loans made by lenders, enabling viable small businesses to obtain funding that might otherwise be declined because they do not have an adequate track record or security. The review found that the scheme had been effective, but recommended that there should be a wider variety of financial products and accredited lenders available under the scheme, including an asset finance variant. The view also indicated the review also indicated that greater awareness of EFG was needed, along with clarification of the eligibility criteria. Mm. Like so many things, like so many government schemes, there are dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of schemes out there, and the people that need it don't always hear about them or can't work out what the eligibility is or what the criteria is.
Yeah, they don't make it easy to apply for them.
So. Absolutely.
Yeah, you were talking about pensions.
It's okay. There's somebody ringing in, and I'm loath to answer it because I keep getting somebody doing a sales call. And as we've just had sales preferences,
exactly. Turn and face the other way because the light's flashing in my eyes. So, okay, you were talking earlier about compulsory workplace pensions, and people mustn't ignore them. Well, the FSB has got a solution. Their workplace pensions, their exclusive workplace pension scheme. FSB Workplace Pensions are experts in auto-enrolment and understand how it will affect your business. They're here to help you meet your obligations and support you through the auto-enrolment journey. Mm. To guide members navigate this, or to help members navigate the minefield of this whole situation, FSB Workplace Pensions' Paul Baker is hosting two webinars, both on the 8th of June. There's two sessions, one at 9:30 a.m., one at 1:30 p.m., where you can get the facts on workplace pensions. Now, there's a whole long link here, but I'm guessing that that's all available on the website, Paul.
Absolutely, yep. It is.
Yep. Perfect.
Yep. Okay. There's a two-year plan to increase the take-up of R&D tax credits. For those of you that don't know about this yet.
Oh, it's a brilliant scheme.
It is a fabulous, fabulous scheme. It's one of those funny things, because those people that deal in R&D tax credits have an enormous problem. If you ring someone up and go, do you want some free money? They go, no, go away, it's a scam. It isn't a scam, but, you know, there's one of those. Anyway, HMRC have announced a two-year plan to increase the take-up on research and development tax relief amongst small firms. And the new measures will focus primarily on increasing awareness and making it easier for firms to apply for this type of tax relief. For example, HMRC will publish improved guidance to help increase firms' understanding of the whole R&D tax relief process. And they will provide business certainty through an advance assurance scheme. So basically, they've got a scheme that says, look, you can actually check what you're going to do and see whether it will likely comply with our tax relief.
Yeah.
But very briefly, what R&D tax credits does, it enables you to claim back a certain amount of your costs for any innovative or new products that you have developed in the course of your business.
Yeah.
And don't get fazed by that. A lot of people go, oh, I'm not a scientific company, or I haven't invented Google or whatever. It's not, you know, it's not that onerous. It's anything that you've done that's slightly different and slightly new.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's always worth.
And it's actually money back. It's not a credit against your tax
return. You don't get a tax credit. No,
they
physically send you cash. Yeah. I have done two in two of my businesses,
yep.
And you get a check eventually for a huge amount of cash.
Absolutely. Mm. And I know, probably like you do, Paul, a number of startups that have pretty much funded their business,
yep.
Because they put their claims in for R&D tax credits. It's
absolutely.
Just brilliant. Brilliant.
Absolutely. Have you got any more FSB news?
No, I'm done with the FSB
well,
news.
That was lucky,
yes,
wasn't it? Because I've
exactly.
done with mine too, so we're right at the end
okay.
of that segment.
Channel Radio News Update.
So that was the FSB News Roundup for this week on May the 31st. We're still getting tweets coming in. Joanne Frey has tweeted, going back to Rob's appearance, perfect chat about ISO. And she started a hashtag, get yourself protected. So there you go.
Oh.
So thank you for that. We've also had a tweet from Kenny Cox, who says, hey, VanillaWeb, you may have read this out.
No, I didn't.
You were talking about Alex and his spreadsheets. This is someone else with spreadsheets. This is Kenny Cox. Hey, VanillaWeb, please give a shout out to Evolve Excel. We're based in the Business Terrace, and we transform your Excel documents online. So
fabulous.
Do give them a follow, and you can follow Kenny on the Twitter, Kenny Cox, C-O-X, underscore, Kenny Cox, underscore. So do check that out. I've had a tweet from the lovely Amanda at B&D Events, who is inquiring about the colour of my shirt. That's an in-joke.
Yes, I know. It's sort of blue.
It has got a little bit of blue in it, but not a lot. It is flowery. It's grey and blue and flowery.
Grey and blue.
Amanda.
Yep.
There you go. What else have we got? Have you got any more emails there?
Yes, I have.
If you go
we were
with
talking
an email.
About apprentices earlier, weren't we, with Emily? And we've got the Department of Work and Pensions and The Department of Business Innovation and Skills have launched a new apprenticeship campaign called Get In, Go Far. So that's www.getingofar, all one word. The aim is to encourage people to see apprenticeships as a route to a career and encourage more employers to offer apprenticeships. So that's exactly what Emily was saying. Whilst, you know, university is great, but actually it's also a route to building a career as well. So to get your career started, you usually need a combination of experience and qualifications, and an apprenticeship gives you both by combining on-the-job training with study, usually a day a week, meaning you earn while you learn.
Absolutely.
So that's good. So get in, go far.
Get in.
Keep resisting the get in.
Yeah, get in.
Absolutely. Okay, I've got the After Hours Club here with guest speaker Peter Searle. Now, again, this is 6 p.m. till 7:30. No booking required. You can just turn up. Peter Searle is from the Business Doctors, Maidstone and Medway. And this event is happening at the farmhouse, little watering hole, 97 to 99 High Street, West Malling. And that's on the 7th of June, 6 p.m. till 7:30 to listen to Peter Searle from Business Doctors.
Fantastic. Well, we're nearly at the end of the show now. I just want to tell you what we've got coming up on Kent Business Radio and Channel Radio later today. And just as I was about to do that, it went off. Right after the show, at 4 o'clock, we have the fabulous Natalie Benaig with the Kent Creative Live show.
We do, yes.
A really brilliant show. And this week, Natalie is going to be talking about the Deal Festival.
I was at Deal at the weekend.
Were you?
Yeah, I went for a walk on the pier.
No big deal.
No. But again, I've done it again.
Yeah, but the Deal Festival is a big deal. And Natalie's going to be talking about that on the Kent Creative Live show. And also, the Deal Festival actually won the Event of the Year category in the Kent Creative Awards 2016. So massive congratulations to them and well done. So that's Natalie Benaig, 4 o'clock, Kent Creative Live show here on Channel Radio. That is followed at 5 o'clock by Craig Avery, the ladies' favourite, Mr. Craig Avery, him of the Stripey Socks. And he has a show with a combination of music and celebrity interviews and entertainment. So do clock in with that at 5 till 7. And then that is followed at 7 o'clock by...
Welcome all to the New Potatoes Show.
Mr. Jamie Andrews with the New Potatoes Show at 7 o'clock. 18 tracks of unsigned, new and up-and-coming music for your delight, pleasure and delectation. 7 till 9. At 9 o'clock, we have our comedy programme, I Was Lord Kitchener's Valet, focusing on that incredibly hilarious year, 1967, where everything was really weird and funny. And you can even see pictures of our plant over in the corner there, Keith.
Mm-hmm.
We call him Keith because he's had more things thrown on him than a Rolling Stone on tour, which is why he's looking decidedly dodgy over there. And then, of course, as always on Channel Radio, we round out tonight with...
It's Club Culture with Boy George.
One, two, three, get down!
Cool drum beat at the squidgy bass, I give you Vanilla Ace, and it rhymes. That means I'm right on time. Welcome to Club Culture, where I control my very own dance universe. 1 hour or more of grooving delectables for your disco pleasure. I'm Boy George.
It's 1 hour of delectable, delicious dance music. It's Club Culture with Boy George on Channel Radio.
So, as always, on a Tuesday night, we round off the evening with the wonderful Boy George and his Club Culture show here on channelradio.co.uk at 10 o'clock. So do listen out for that and do listen in. Fantastic shows, all of them. But you've been listening to the Business Bunker Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the absolutely lovely Shirley Mansfield.
Yes.
We will be back with you with a show next week. I'd just like to say a massive thank you to today's show sponsor, Cascade Insurance Brokers, and to our two fabulous guests, the lovely Emily Lamb of RAP Office Contracts, and the equally lovely Rob Fenn of the British Assessment Bureau.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show. Do give them both a follow on the Twitter. If you missed any of the show, the listen again will be up shortly and the podcast download will be available shortly, so do check into that. But as I say, that's another show done and dusted for another week. We will be back with you next week.
Yeah, let's try and book some sunshine.
Absolutely, yeah. Anyway, have a great week and we will see you all next week. Bye for now.
Bye.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.